During my visit, a number of the crew were playing a game somewhat like basketball. This gave me an opportunity to study these people more closely, and I noted that they were exactly the same as Earth people. At least I could see no difference. They were from about 5'6" to 6'6" in height. Some were blue-eyed, others appeared to have green and brown eyes. Skin coloring appeared a bronze sun, tan, and their hair in many shades from golden bland to a reddish brown. They all appeared in glowing health, and their eyes sparkled with that health. After my careful inspection of the inside of this great ship, I walked outside where Frank and Francis were waiting for me. Having partly recovered from my surprise on seeing the ship, I now took a more careful look at its outside. It was indeed a strange-looking object. I found it hard to believe my senses, and still thought I must be dreaming. My feelings were no doubt reflected on my face, because my two companions gave amused chuckles at my bewilderment. The landed ship, which appeared to be made of grey-colored metal, looked like a big egg, and circling it, about 20 feet away from the main body of the ship, was an unsupported ring of the same grey-colored material. I found out later that it was a guide ring, whatever that meant. This guide ring, which was over 700 feet in diameter, was not attached to the main body of the ship by any visible man's. I thought, maybe the power plant is inside this ring. In the center of the ship was the control tower, and elevator, with a door at the lower end, which at the moment rested on the ground. This tower is 300 feet in height, with 50 feet protruding from the main body at each end. That is 50 feet protruding from the main body at each end, 50 feet at the top and 50 feet at the bottom, which made the main body 200 feet high and 700 feet in diameter. After a careful inspection, I could find no sign of a motor, unless it was inside that guide ring. It was 20 feet in diameter, and depending on what kind of motor, it was large enough to hold it. I said as much to Frank. "Well," he answered, "all right, my fine doubter, you may now go inside that guide ring." I said nothing, but at the moment I failed to see how I could go inside. It turned out to be easy. Frank led me back inside the ship, up to the third level, then to a door which he opened, and I could see the guide ring about 20 feet away. I then noted a door in its side. Frank pushed a button, which was on the wall near the door. In a few seconds, the door in the guide ring opened and a platform came out of the door opening towards us. In a few more seconds, Frank had the platform attached, and I noticed the platform had handholds, for which I was very glad, for we were about 150 feet from the ground. Frank said, "Come with me," and walked across the platform and into the guide ring, as I followed close behind. "Go all around," said Frank, "make a good inspection. You may go alone, I will wait here for you. Take your time." Without further words, I started my walk around the inside of this mystery ring, and what a mystery it turned out to be. I do not know where the light came from. There were no windows, but I could see clearly, and the mystery proved to be nothing. A completely empty tube. How did it work? How did it guide? How was it supported? Questions, questions, Noan. 94 Part 2 Chapter 2 Swas. I could not find any power plant, just empty nothing. I walked completely around inside that tube to find Frank waiting for me. "Well, my good friend," he asked, "did you find what you were looking for?" "No, Frank," I replied, "I found nothing." "Will you tell me the answer to this mystery?" "Yes," said Frank, "I will tell you, but it's a big secret. You must not tell anyone, do you agree?" "Yes," I said, "I agree." "Well," said Frank, "I have told you, but you doubt. This great mystery is s no more or less than the power of thought. You have made a most careful inspection, you found only empty space, did you not?" "Yes," I replied, "I did inspect your great ship, outside and in, and also the ring. To the best of my ability, I found no sign of any power plant. Therefore, at least for the moment, I must believe all you say. I believe in the power of thought, but I must admit, my Earth man faith is not very strong. Chapter 3. The third visit of the Great Space, Ship X-12 was a few days after Tesla died. Members of the crew had attended the funeral with over 1,000 people, some of whom had come from far-off corners of the Earth to pay their last respects to the inventor of the 20th century. Frank said that he and Francis had been with Tesla a few days before he died, and that he had died a happy man. "And," said Frank with a smile, as he handed me a large envelope, "he told me to be sure to give you this. It contains some very important papers concerning the work which you must now continue alone." When Frank and I finished our talk about my work of the future, Francis said she had something to say.
"Yes," said Frank, "Francis will give us a little lecture which could be a greater help to your world than all the inventions of man."
Francis smiled. "I haven't very much to say, but I am sure you will like this message which your old friend wrote only a few short days before he left this earth."
Francis then read this message, the last words of this great man who did so much for mankind,
"One of the most important facts in life, even if we do not always see it, is that we live only one day. The human struggle is mostly for one day. We cannot live tomorrow before it comes. If we can live consistently for one day, we may hope to do the same the next, and so on to the end. A day has a rounded completeness. It is a little world of life. One day is like to all days," wrote Montaigne.
"He who has lived a day has lived an age," said Labruyère.
"Every day is a little life," said another. "Those therefore that dare lose a day are dangerously prodigal, those that misspend it desperate. As our habits, thoughts, words, and actions are on one day, of that same character they will most likely partake as day is added to day and goes on to make up the months and years. If we can get through one day without giving way to temptation, then come night and sleep, and tomorrow we start afresh for another period of hours in which to be strong and true. On this day then, we are each of us bound to begin by asking ourselves, is my conscience void of offense both before God and man? Do I condemn myself in anything which I allow? When I have been saying that as one day of our lives is, so will in all probability the rest be, I am only insisting on the blessing of being able to take each unit of our lives as it comes, and making the best of it, making it perfect, making it ideal. One day well spent is a pledge for those that are coming."
Abraham Lincoln said, "The struggle of today is not altogether for tomorrow, it is for the vast future also. Every day is a gift I receive from heaven, let me enjoy today that which it bestows upon me, and tomorrow belongs to no one."
1. End of Tesla's last words. May this message bring joy to every heart who reads it. Health is a mental condition. Physical well-being depends on one's mental condition. All bad habits, such as smoking, strong drink, drugs, etc., depend on a mental factor. A sick mind breeds a sick body. Bad habits indicate a sick mind and a sick physical condition, and when the majority of people suffer from bad habits, the end result is a sick world, so said Tesla. And while we are on the subject of a sick world, I would like to quote from a little booklet by Pemi F. Rockwood, who has granted permit to copy. Mr. Rockwood has the same idea as Tesla and Frank. "The people of Earth are wasting their time on rubbish and there is no time to waste." I quote in part, "The greatest peril to Western civilization today is not from communism, but from the constant erosion of faith in God. Large numbers of supposedly religious people simply do not believe in God. The curse of our day that has brought about this faithless way of living is so-called evolution. Our young people are being taught by unscientific text books about the biggest fraud ever brought into the class rooms. And our young people, in order to be sophisticated, allow themselves to be brainwashed into thinking that there is no personal God who created this universe. This message is offered to those who are willing to think independently of archaic teaching that characterizes so many class rooms today. Those who criticize the Bible the most read it the least, and know little or nothing about it. What is science? Can we improve upon the dictionary's answer? Knowledge gained and verified by exact observation and correct thinking,
especially as methodically formulated and arranged in a rational system. This definition takes you out of the realm of speculation. It disposes of such terms as theory and hypothesis, making them possible servants of science, but never its synonyms. Science is the verification of knowledge by exact observation and correct thinking, and is the highest accomplishment of which the human mind is capable. To not every man, however, who cries Eureka has found it. What is the Bible? The Bible is the God-breathed book, written by holy men of God who spake as they were moved by the Holy Ghost. The remarkable evidence of the skepticism of this generation is that so many educated leaders and preachers are willing to throw away the fact of the verbal inspiration of the Bible. At the same time, they tried to tell us that God stimulated the thought of the Bible but did not determine the speech, that some parts of the Bible are literally true, and others only allegory or myth, that some are factual, others are fiction, that some are to be treated with credence, and others with criticism, that all must come to the test of one's inner consciousness or the logical processes of man's wisdom and, at that court, be either accepted or rejected. The Bible itself is God's special revelation to man, and this revelation is truth absolutely. The pursuit of scientific research, on the other hand, can never achieve more than relative truth. The growth of science is a history of constantly increasing knowledge resulting from human investigation or discovery. The Bible, on the other hand, bears eternal, absolute truth. The pages of scientific research are replete with examples of abandoned ideas, discarded theories, and repealed laws resulting from a continuous process of adapting earlier ideas to more recently discovered scientific data. The Bible is God's revelation and does not change with the changes of men. Evolution is a theory of a materialistic philosophy of life based upon suppositions, which have not been verified by science. Evolution is the foundation stone of communism, based upon the false theory of automatic and inevitable progress. It is the foundation stone of militarism, based upon the concept of the survival of the fittest. Two world wars were the logical outcome of evolutionary teaching, and we are now preparing for the next world war. Evolution is also the foundation stone of atheism, based upon a materialistic concept of life. The word evolution is often abused. The casual speaker talks of the evolution of the telephone, the evolution of the electric light, and other products of man's industry and intelligence. The proper word here is development. All of these mechanical improvements came about because of direct supervision and control. Organic evolution, in its simplest definition, can be best expressed by the word transmutation. The theory admits of no active intelligence in control, and design is foreign to the entire process. Evolution is not scientifically possible. First, acquired characters are not transmitted to or inherited by the offspring, as the evolutionists declare. The habit of foot binding, for example, common among Chinese women for centuries, has not led to any inherited deformity of the foot. Our domestic chicken is a descendant of the Roman fowl, and no essential change has taken place in 2,000 generations of breeding. 3. If anyone would sincerely like to know if they are standing on a sure foundation, I suggest they write for the booklet, for if you have been misled to believe in evolution, you are heading someplace fast. But you can be sure it is not heaven, or a higher level. It is your life, and you are free to do as you like with it. But, whatever you do, don't try to mix evolution with divine love. We either believe without question in the Bible, or we do not believe. To take a half-way stand is a lukewarm attitude, and if you wish to know what that man's, read Revelation, chapter 3, chapter 4, as I watched from a distance, the great X-12 rise silently and swiftly, and take off into the sky, I wondered exactly what the present-day scientific knowledge concerning the cosmic rays amounted to. Then Tesla first discovered them, way back in 1893, the scientific world laughed at him. They said no such rays existed. Tesla proved they did, that much is history. So today, due to the attitude of supposed scientific experts, who in reality are not truly scientific, for the truly scientific mind never doubts, very little is known all about the subject, But some wise men have discovered that our atmosphere is continually being bombarded by atomic particles from outer space. These are known as primary cosmic rays. One, these high-speed particles are mostly said, by the above named experts, to be protons, and they say that when these protons go crashing through our atmosphere, they break up some of Earth's atoms, the particles of which are, so they say, called secondary cosmic rays. Which statement, coming from doubters who said cosmic rays did not exist, is something to think about. They also say that both of these minute cosmic rays are extremely energetic and can enter and pass through almost any form of matter. Every minute thousands of them pass through everything on Earth, including man. Our scientists admit that they do not know exactly where the primary cosmic rays come from. In my opinion, the reason for their lack of knowledge is because they neglect to study the Bible, for in it is the place where Tesla first discovered them, 35 years before the scientific world experts thought maybe they might exist. The Great Nebula in Orion appears, to the naked eye, as only a single hazy star, but when viewed through a large telescope, this great mystery of the heavens is revealed to be a tremendous cavern. Perhaps 19 trillion miles across our entire solar system would be lost therein. Could not the cosmic rays come from there? 98. Chapter 4. Part 2. After the great spaceship left, I received many messages from its crew, but they did not return after that last visit in 1961, until 1969. It was during the evening of January 21st, 1969 that a number of friends came to visit me, and, if possible, listen to a message on the Tesla scope. No sound was heard from it until around 10 p.m. after we had been talking for 3 hours, when the voice of Frank was heard very clearly, with the same old message, which I had received on the scope, and recorded so many times since that first visit of the Great X-12 in the spring of 1941. I will repeat this message for the benefit of those who may not have heard it. Apart from the omission of certain personal messages connected mainly with my continued work for Tesla, the following is the message, which I first received in 1941.3 and which, in essence, has been repeated over the years. In fact, it is the message which we can read in the Bible. However, this message which I have personally heard by means of the Tesla scope, from 1941 right up to recent months 1969, comes from real live persons, who say they are aboard a spacecraft, which they call the X-12, a mothership. For here then, is the message. Mean 5, you first received this message, you will, like most Earth people, doubt. This is one of the strange things we find about the people of Earth, their continued doubting. They say, they believe in God, but they doubt. They say God can cure sickness and their troubles, but they doubt. Therefore, we expect you to doubt also. You will wonder if we really come from the planet Venus. Do we come from outer space? And you will wonder how we are able to talk to you in your own language. We use English at this time because you, our friend Matthews, understand that language. But we have made a study of every language used by mankind. Actually, we would prefer to transmit our thoughts by the use of mental waves. As we look down on Earth, we note the greatest confusion and misunderstanding. Instead of acknowledging the one God and looking towards Him for enlightenment, we find you all over the Earth running hopelessly and helplessly in pursuit of many things you think will increase your personal happiness, and yet you wonder why you continue to suffer. We hear you, year after year, asking the same question: why must we suffer? Why do we still have wars, sickness, poverty, famine and death? Why does pure joy always run away faster than we can so that we can never catch up with it? The answers to these questions are to be found in the fact that instead of turning upwards to God, your thoughts are earthbound and you judge only by what you see in others around you, the vast majority of whom are sick, unhappy and full of bad habits. Doubting the existence of the Supreme Being, and futilely, you follow the crowd. Your Earth is full of hate and misery, and this condition has come to be accepted as the rule for mankind on Earth. This is not how God intended life to be on your beautiful planet, but very few of you obey the law of God. Many of you attend some form of religious service on your Sundays, but how many Earth people carry out God's law in their everyday lives? We are amazed and saddened to find how much of your lives are devoted to inventing and using destructive machines with which you murder each other. We see you spending vast sums of money pretending to bring peace on Earth, when you should know that the only way of obtaining peace is free, through Christ, love. There is no other way, so why waste your time and money? We ask this question realizing that most Earth people have known for almost 2,000 years, that the only way to secure peace on Earth and goodwill towards your fellow men, is by following the teachings of Jesus Christ, whom a God of love sent to your planet to bring spiritual enlightenment to mankind. Therefore, we can only sadly conclude that the people of Earth must be suffering from some form of mental sickness which can only be cured by the adoption of Christ's philosophy of love. You have heard all this before, and much of what we say may fall on deaf ears, but our thoughts are directed to those few of the Earth people who have sufficient mental and common sense power to think clearly and to know right from wrong. These few have been placed among you to help others to live as God intended you to live, to think clearly and to know right from wrong, and to grow in a manner to be of service to the great, all-knowing, all-loving God, and to all His creatures. Your present behavior is the reason for the continued visits to Earth by those of the space people. It is our duty to warn you, remind you, that if you continue to refuse to obey the law of God, you will surely destroy yourselves, and we shall not have many people to pick up when the Earth is about to be destroyed. To help the people on Earth, we brought down one of our own to live among you. During a trip to Earth, a child was born on our spaceship, which we call the X-12. We landed our ship at midnight, on July 9, 1856, and we decided to leave this boy on your Earth. This boy was Nikola Tesla. We left him on your Earth in the hope that his higher mental power would enable him to help your world, which even then was torn by hate and war, to come cut of the darkness into the light. 6. During the years between 1856 and 1943, we landed many times on Earth, but we found no improvement there. At the death of Tesla in 1943, we landed again and attended his funeral. We were saddened to find that the Earth people had used the gifts of Tesla and other great inventors only to satisfy their greed and lust for power, that the same evil conditions existed on Earth, and that its people continued to expend their energy on war and killing their own kind, which is contrary to God's law, which clearly states, "Thou shalt not kill." These things are beyond our understanding, for Venus in all its history has never had war. We have but one purpose in life, to serve God, and this we do with all our energy of body and mind, and because we do this, our mental power grows stronger with age. We remain in perfect health until the day we die. We enjoy perfect harmony, health, and happiness with our loved ones A11 the days of our lives. We have no place in our hearts for selfish desires, because we know and believe that God's law is good, and therefore we have no need of man-made laws. Lack of faith in God has left your Earth in the Dark Ages 7, and you will never progress or know peace of mind, true happiness, and complete harmony until you learn to renew your faith and to become higher in your thinking and living than the crawling things, which you now appear to copy. To overcome hatred and prevent wars, you must learn to remove every trace of national pride and racial discrimination, for there is, in fact, only one race of mankind whom God created. 8. The truth of God's law may be learned by all people on Earth. You have a book, probably the most important book in your history, called the Bible, which contains the truth for all those with eyes to see. It teaches the only way in which mankind should live, for the law of God is love. We suggest that you turn to the teaching of Christ for the only solution to all of Earth's problems. At present, the law of Earthmen appears to be mainly one of hate. They are always fighting and killing each other. War is murder. We of Venus do not understand how you can truly call yourselves Christians, for Christ taught only love. If you continue to make war, you will bring about the destruction of your planet, and in this regard, we refer you to the book of Isaiah. We have tried to talk to the people of Earth for many hundreds of years, but without good results. Some of our people landed on Earth thousands of years ago, as you may read in your Bible, which contains many references to the visits of space people to Earth. The Teslascope for Space Communication, by Arthur Matthews, conceived by Nikola Tesla in 1898 to communicate with planet Venus. First model built 1918, second model built by Arthur Matthews with Tesla 1938, rebuilt the 1938 model in 1947. Third completely new design model built by Arthur Matthews 1967. Adapting the micro-miniature parts, thus reducing size to 6 feet long and 4 inches in diameter, see sketch of the 1967 model. We bring this same message to you in the hope that whoever receives it, will extend it word for word, to as many people on Earth as possible. You cannot receive our message on your regular radio systems, but we hope that others will give due honor to Tesla, and succeed in building his scope, by means of which we can pass on our vital message in the dark days ahead. We cannot interfere with your destiny, which by God, given free will you have created for yourselves. We can only hope that some of you will listen to Christ, asking God for wisdom. We have repeated this message for so many hundreds of years. Can we ever hope to see the people of Earth learn and live by it? You should. It is your only hope, your only salvation. End of message. Chapter 5. A very loud buzzing almost drowned out the last words of Frank's message, and when Francis tried to talk a few moments later, it was impossible to understand a word. The loud buzzing completely covered the beautiful voice of our good friend. I managed to hear that she wished to give me 12 meditations on the good life, and though the strange static prevented her doing so at that time, I knew that my Venusian friends would make further attempts to communicate this message of importance. They tried repeatedly, but each time Francis' words of wisdom were drowned by the crackling sound of a loud static, until one night, I managed to receive a few words from Frank and I understood him to say, "Expect us on April 15th. Can you imagine my excitement on hearing those words? I had heard from them via the Tesla scope, but they had not landed on my place since 1961. How I was to enjoy a visit within a few weeks, but as usual, I must not tell anyone, not even my dearest friend, for wolves have ears. I had listened with mounting excitement to Francis and Frank's words, for they both repeated the message to make sure that I heard correctly. It was thrilling indeed to learn that the great X-12 would visit me again after an absence of 8 years, and I wondered deeply at the portent of the special messages that made such a personal visit necessary. In the few weeks that followed, I waited with growing impatience for the arrival of the X-12. As I had received no indication of the exact time that the spaceship would arrive, I had set up the Tesla scope to receive warning of the approach of the X-12 during the period from April 10 to 15. I kept constantly alert for the alarm signal and must confess I had very little sleep. When April 14 arrived, with still no warning of the approach of the X-12, I decided to keep vigil day and night. Shortly after midnight, I went outside to check on weather conditions. It was a dry, fine night, but with low, hanging clouds, ideal for a concealed landing of the large spaceship. Back in the house, I waited it out. It was around 1:30 a.m. when the alarm signal on the Tesla scope rang shrilly, and although I was expecting it, I was startled almost out of my shoes. I ran to the door, for I wanted to see the great ship land. But as I fumbled with the door latch, it got ahead of me. Noiselessly, like a silent cloud, the X-12 had landed in the large hollow of my big meadow, and as I ran towards it, there it stood in all its silver, gray glory, and once again, I marveled at its gigantic proportions. Then a door in the base of the spaceship slid open, and framed against a background of light stood the figures of my two Venusian friends, Frank and Francis. A wonderful welcoming smile on their faces.